The Last Unicorn by Peter Beagle. Chapter 1. The unicorn lived in a lilac wood, and she lived all alone. She was very old, though she did not know it, and she was no longer the careless color of sea foam, but rather the color of snow falling on the moonlit night. But her eyes were still clear and unwearied, and she still moved like the shadow of the sea. She did not look anything like a horned horse, as unicorns are often pictured, being small and cloven-hoofed, and possessing the oldest, wildest grace that horses have never had, that deer have only in a shy, thin imitation, and goats in dancing mockery. Her neck was long and slender, making her head seem smaller than it was, and the mane that fell almost to the middle of her back was as soft as dandelion fluff, and as fine as cuirass. She had pointed ears and thin legs, with feathers of white hair at the ankles, and a long horn above her eyes shone and shivered with its own seashell light, even in the deepest midnight. She had killed dangerous dragons with it, and healed a king whose poison wound would not close. It knocked down right chestnuts for bear cubs. Unicorns are immortal. It is their nature to live alone in one place, usually a forest where there was a pool clear enough for them to see themselves. For they are a little vain, knowing themselves to be the most beautiful creatures in all of the world. And magic besides, they mate very rarely, and no one is more enchanted than one where a unicorn has been born. The last time she had seen another unicorn, the young virgins who still came seeking her now and then had called to her in a different tongue. But then she had no idea of months and years and centuries, or even of seasons. It was always spring in her forest, because she lived there, and she wandered all day among the great beech trees, keeping watch over the animals that lived in the ground and under the bushes, in nests and caves, earths and treetops. Generation after generation, wolves and rabbits alike, they hunted and loved and had children and died. And as a unicorn did none of these things, she never grew tired of watching them. One day, it happened that two men with long bows rode through the forest, hunting for deer. The unicorn followed them, moving so warily that not even the horses knew she was near. The sight of men filled her with an old, slow, strange mixture of tenderness and terror. She never let one see her, if she could help it, but she liked to watch them ride by, hearing them talking. I mislike the feel of this force, the elder of the two hunters grumbled. The creatures that live in the unicorns would learn of little magic of their own in time, mainly concerned with disappearing, and will find no game here. Unicorns are long gone, the man said. If indeed they ever were, this is a forest like any other. Then why do the leaves never fall here? Or the snow? I tell you, there is one unicorn left in the world. Good luck to the lonely old thing, I say. And as long as it lives in the forest, there won't be a hunter takes so much as a titmouse home at his saddle. Ride on, ride on, you'll see. I know their ways, unicorns. From books, answered the other. Only from books and tales and songs. Not in the reign of three kings has there ever been even a whisper of a unicorn seen in this country or any other. You know no more about unicorns than I do. And I've read the same books and heard the same stories, and I've never seen one either. The first hunter was silent for a time, and the second whistled sourly to himself. And the first said, My great-grandmother saw a unicorn once. She used to tell me about it when I was little. Oh, indeed. And did she capture it with a golden brittle? No, she didn't have one. You don't have to have a golden brittle to catch a unicorn. That part's a fairy tale. You only need to be pure of heart. Yes, yes, the younger man chuckled. Did she ride her unicorn then, bareback under the trees like a nymph in the early days of the world? My great-grandmother was afraid of large animals. She didn't ride it, but she sat very still. And the unicorn put its head on her lap and fell asleep. My great-grandmother never moved until it woke. What did it look like? The Pliny describes unicorns as being very ferocious, similar to the rest of its body to a horse and the head of a deer, the feet of an elephant, the tail of a boar, the deep bellowing voice and a single black horn, 2 cubits in length. In the Chinese, my great-grandmother said that only unicorns had a good smell. She never could abide the smell of any beast, even a cat or a cow, let alone a wild thing. But she loved the smell of a unicorn. She began to cry once, telling me about it. Of course, she's a very old woman then, and cried at anything that reminded her of her youth. Let's turn around and hunt somewhere else, the sinker hunter said abruptly. The unicorn stepped softly into the thicket as they turned their horses and took up the trail only when they were well ahead of her once more. The band whirled in silence until they were nearing the edge of the forest. Then the second hunter asked quietly, "Why did they go away? Do you think? If there ever were such things." "Who knows? Times change. Would you call this age a good one for unicorns?" "No. But I wonder if any man before us has ever thought this time a good time for unicorns. And it seems to me that I have heard stories, but I was sleepy with wine, or was thinking of something else." "Well, no matter. There's a light enough for yet to hunt, if we hurry. Come." They broke out of the woods, kicked their horses to a gallop, and dashed away. But before they were out of sight, the first hunter looked back over his shoulder and called, just as though he could see the unicorn standing in the shadow. "Stay where you are, poor beast. This is no world for you. Stay in your forest and keep your trees green and your friends long live. Pay no mind to young girls, as they never become anything more than silly old women. And good luck to you." The unicorn stood still at the edge of the forest and said aloud, "I am the only unicorn there is." They were the first words she had spoken, even to herself, in more than 100 years. "That can't be," she thought. She had never minded being alone, never seeing another unicorn, because she'd always known there were others like her in the world. And a unicorn needs no more than that for company. "But I would know if all others were gone. I'd be gone too. Nothing can happen to them that does not happen to me." Her own voice frightened her and made her want to be running. She moved along the dark paths of her forest, swift and shining, passing through sudden clearings, unbearably brilliant with grass or soft with shadow, aware of everything around her. From the weeds that brushed her ankles to insect quick flickers of blue and silver as the wind lifted the leaves. "Oh, I could never leave this. I never could. Not if I really were the only unicorn in the world. I know how to live there. I know how everything smells and tastes and is. What could I ever search for in the world? Except this again." But when she stopped running at the last and stood still, listening to the crows and quarrel of squirrels over her head, she wondered, "But suppose they are riding together, somewhere far away. What if they were hiding and waiting for me?" From that first moment of doubt, there was no peace for her. From the time she first imagined leaving her forest, she could not stand in one place without wanting to be somewhere else. She trotted up and down beside her pool, restless and unhappy. Unicorns are not meant to make choices. She said no, and yes, and no again, day and night. For the first time, she began to feel the minutes crawling over her like worms. I will not go, because men have seen no unicorns for a while. Does that mean they are all vanished? If it were true, I would not go. I live here. But at last she woke up in the middle of one warm night and said, yes, but now. She hurried through her forest, trying to look at nothing and smell nothing, trying not to feel her earth under her cloven hooves. The animals who moved in the dark, the owls and the foxes and the deer, raised their heads as she passed by, but she would not look at them. I must go quickly, she thought, and come back as soon as I can. Maybe I won't go very far, but whether I find the others or not, I will come back very soon, as soon as I can. Under the moon, the road that ran from the edge of her forest gleamed like water. But when she stepped out to it, away from the trees, she felt how hard it was and how long. She almost turned back then, but instead she took a deep breath of the woods air that still drifted to her. Held it in her mouth like a flower as long as she could. The road hurried to nowhere and had no end. It ran through villages and small towns, flat country, mountains, stony barrens, and meadows springing out of stones. And it belonged to none of these. It never rested anywhere. It rushed the unicorn along, tugging at her feet like the chide, fretting at her, never letting her be quiet and listen to the air, as she was used to do. Her eyes were always filled with dust, and her mane was stiff and heavy with dirt. Time had always passed her by in the forest, but now it was she who passed through time as she traveled. The colors of trees changed, and the animals along the way grew heavy coats and lost them again. The clouds kept or hurried up before the changing woods. There were pink and gold in sun or livid with storm. Wherever she went, she searched for her people, but she found no trace of them. In all of the tongues she heard spoken along the road, there was not even a word for them anymore. Early one morning, about to turn off the road to sleep, she saw a man hoeing his garden. Knowing that she should hide, she stood still instead and watched him work until he straightened up and saw her. He was fat, and his cheeks jumped with every step he took. Oh, he said. Oh, you're beautiful. When he tucked off his belt and made a loop in it, who moved clumsily toward her, the unicorn was more pleased than frightened. The man knew what she was and what he himself was for. To hoe turnips and pursue something that shone that could run faster than he could. She sidestepped his first lunge as lightly as though the wind had blown her out of reach. I have been hunted with bells and banners in my time, she told him. Men knew that the only way to hunt me was to make chase so wondrous that I would come near to see it. And even so, I was never once captured. My foot had slipped, said the man. Steady now, you pretty thing. I've never really understood, the unicorn mused as the man picked himself up. What you dream of doing with me once you caught me? The man leaped again, and she slipped away from him like rain. I don't think you know yourself. Ha, steady, steady, easy now. The man's face was dripped with dirt, and he could hardly catch his breath. Pretty, you pretty little mare. Mare? Unicorn trumped the word so shrilly that the man stopped pursuing her and clamped his head to his ears. Mare? I? A horse? Is that what you take me for? Is that what you see? Good horse, the fat man panted. He leaned on the fence and wiped his face. curry you up, clean you off. You'll be the prettiest old mare anywhere. He reached out with the belt again. Take you to the fair. Come on, horse.
A horse?
The unicorn said. That's what
you're trying to capture? A white mare with her mane full of burrs?
As the man approached her, she hooked her horn through the belt, jerked it out of his grasp, and hurled it across the road into a patch of daisies.
A horse, am I? A horse, indeed.
And for a moment, the man was very close to her. Her great eyes stared into his own, which were small and tired and amazed. Then she turned and fled the road, running so swiftly that those who saw her exclaimed, "Now there's a horse. There's a real horse." One old man said quietly to us, "Why, that's an Arab horse. I was on a ship with an Arab horse once." From that time, the unicorn avoided towns, even at night, unless there were no way at all to go around them. And even so, there were a few men and gave chase, but always to a wandering white mare. Never in the gay and reverent manner proper to the pursuit of a unicorn. They came with ropes and nets and baits of sugar lumps, and they whistled and called Bess and Nellie. Sometimes she would slow down enough for their horses to catch her scent, then watch as the beasts reared and wheeled away from their terrified riders. The horses always knew her. How can it be? She wondered. I supposed I could understand it if men had simply forgotten unicorns. For they had changed, so they hated all unicorns, and now tried to kill them and when they saw them. But to not see them at all. To look at them and see nothing, something else. What do they look like to one another, then? What do trees look like to them? Or houses? Or real horses? Or their own children? Sometimes she thought, if men no longer know what they're looking at, there may well be unicorns in the world yet, unknown and glad of it. But she knew beyond both hope and vanity that men had changed and the world with them, because the unicorns were gone. Yet she went along the hard road, although each day she wished a little more that she had never left her forest.